The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
President-elect Trump says he is going to pardon January 6th rioters. We don't know which ones or how many in the first hour after he is inaugurated. How do you feel about that?
I think that is a terrible idea. These are people who have been duly tried and convicted in a court of law of having assaulted police officers, stormed into the Capitol, in many cases attempted directly, physically, and violently to interrupt the peaceful transfer of power.
And so hearing Trump not just saying he would pardon them, but that it would truly be one of his first acts upon taking office, what is your view of that?
Well, I mean, look, it's wrong. Obviously, this is basically sending a message, not just that in his mind, January 6th was a beautiful day. Like he said, I lived it. It wasn't a beautiful day. But I think he's also sending a message that, look, if you commit violence on my behalf, I will pardon you. That's pretty chilling. That's pretty eerie. But look, I mean, Kalen, he said he was going to do this. I'll give him credit for that. He ran saying he was going to pardon these folks, and America voted for him. So it's not a surprise. I think, though, history, which usually gets it right, will look back and say it was a very, very shameful thing that he's planning to do.
So a confidential human source is a fancy word phrase for a spy. So we know there were 26 paid spies by the FBI present on the Capitol grounds that day, according to this IG's report. Apparently only three of them were authorized to be there. So, but again, why so many? What were they doing? What were the conversations they were having? And if they were, in fact, according to the IG and the FBI, not authorized to be there, then why weren't they prosecuted like everybody else who were prosecuted for similar issues? I just think this report raises more questions, but certainly at a minimum, gives some credibility to people who have been saying this for so many years.
And I assume that we're never going to learn the names or the identities of the confidential informants.
But if you remember, anyone who even raised the possibility that there were paid FBI spies part of what happened on January 6th, they were deemed crazy, conspiracy theorists, and the like.
And what does this report do to the January 6th defendants? None of the confidential informants were arrested or charged. These guys were right alongside everyone walking into the Capitol. But you're in prison for years? Now, if you're a defense attorney for a Jan 6er and this drops after the case was decided, that could change everything. Constitutional law professor Jonathan Turley says this, quote, "There is a question of why the confidential human sources who entered the Capitol were not charged as part of an operation that the Justice Department described as an effort to shock and awe, targeting everyone involved that day. This report does not find specific wrongdoing or direction from confidential human sources in the rioting. Congress, however, is likely to seek more information on these sources and their conduct on the day." Are you allowed to commit crimes as a spy for the FBI and not get charged? Because they said this was the greatest attack on democracy ever. Said it was up there with 9/11. Traitors, they said, seditionists. They're off scot-free. You can try to overthrow the government if you're an FBI rat and just walk away. Congress has to find out.
So out comes the report, finally, much anticipated. It's been almost 4 years. And as damning as the report is, it's incomplete. The FBI is still stonewalling. They've been doing it for years. We'll play you the clips a little bit later. But even still, just like with the IG's report on Crossfire Hurricane, the investigation into Donald Trump and the fake Russia collusion, that hoax, even with an Obama appointee leading the charge on the internal investigation. Still, you see just how corrupt these government agencies are. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, the final show of the week, and what a busy and enjoyable week that it's been. You can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. As I say, it's been a busy week, but to have Lee Smith on, and we'll have the live show with him. We've got another, I think it's about a 21-minute segment lined up for the end of the show today. We've also got the World Watch segment for the middle of the program, so you'll want to stay tuned all the way through to get all of this this breaking news, I guess we could say. Everyone else says it. One of our news gatherers said, you know what you need is a fulfilled prophecy tracker just running at the bottom of the screen, like they did during the COVID scaremongering, keeping track of all the people that were dying. They're dying all around us. You think about just what's happened since November 5. That's what, a month and a half ago? Germany's government collapsing, France, the Assad regime, as we discussed at length with Lee Smith on Wednesday. Of course, just the fact that Trump returned to office, that's what has all of these cockroaches scurrying. Because like Jesse noted last night on his show, they never expected Donald Trump to return. They didn't expect this. They thought the crimes would be covered up for good. They thought January 6th was the end of Donald Trump. All of it was staged. All of it was fake. And they know it. Look at what this reveals. Okay, so there's more than 26 informants or federal agents. And Chris Wray, for arguing back and forth, well, we didn't have any actual agents. And then the regime media, their take on yesterday's IG report, well, there were no FBI agents. No, just all of these freelancers that were paid by the FBI to spy. Well, that's putting it nicely. If four of them actually went in to the Capitol, like Ray Epps encouraged them to do. And what about Ray Epps? Is there anything in the report about Ray Epps? He's on video. He got charged with what, a misdemeanor? This report, as much as it conceals, and remember, Sundance has taught us this, and my father brings this out in America Under Attack. Whenever the government is investigating itself, the purpose of the investigation is to cover up crime, not expose it, certainly not. But even still, because everyone knows, they've got to come out and say, okay, there were no agents, but there were 26 CHSs, confidential human sources for the FBI, and four of them breached the actual building. You heard Kinzinger say there, I lived through it. And it was a terrifying day. Nancy Mace was recently assaulted by some crazy at the Capitol. And as in terms of like a physical assault, that day that she was attacked, I forget how long it was, just a few months ago, I think. But there's more violence. There was more violence that was carried out against members of Congress on the day Nancy Mace was attacked than on January 6th. I mean, what happened to Kinzinger? He said it was a horrible day. They all talked about how violent it was and how they very nearly died if you were AOC and a mile away. I mean, it was a near-death experience. But how many of them were actually physically assaulted? Okay, the skirmishes between police officers and people there. But look at what this report reveals. If it was, the like Jesse noted in the cold open, if this was on par with 9/11, if this was an insurrection, if this was an attempt to overthrow the government, you can get off scot-free if you're an FBI informant, but not if you're a MAGA supporter. The IG report yesterday, among other things, it reveals the two-tiered system of justice that we've been living through now for decades. Certainly going back to the time of Obama, you put the MAGA people in jail. The FBI agents, the FBI informants, well, they're just doing their job. They can, I mean, they can push through the boundaries. They can go right into the Capitol and nothing happens to them. How about that? 26 of them in total. This is from the New York Post. Sorry, Fox News. Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz said there were more than two dozen confidential human sources in the crowd outside the Capitol, but only three were assigned by the FBI to be present for the event, while stressing that none of the sources was authorized or directed by the Bureau to break the law or encourage others to commit illegal acts. But if they we'll just play along. Let's suppose it was an insurrection. They weren't encouraged by the FBI to break the law. Well, that's heartening. But if they did, then why weren't they prosecuted? Why weren't they put in jail? They were part of the attack, right? It was a setup. And that's what they're letting it drip, drip, drip. How convenient, by the way, that Chris Wray announces he's going to resign the day before this report shows up. I mean, again, I don't want to just live in the past, given all of the prophecies that are being fulfilled. But this shows, going back to November 5, it shows how God intervened to save this nation temporarily. But look at what has been covered up. Look at the crimes that Obama's DOJ and FBI were getting away with. You can see why there's so much support for Donald Trump's picks, even if there are five or six rhinos in the Senate that would prefer not to go in the direction of Patel or Hegseth. I mean, MAGA's lighting up the phone lines over at the Senate. And it looks like both of them are going to get through because of it. It says here, but only three were assigned by the FBI to be present for the event. Well, I read that. This report, it, as many have commented, it raises a lot more questions. And it's just like when they investigated themselves following Crossfire Hurricane. Yeah, there were 17 instances where we either covered things up or actually lied to the FISA courts. Yeah, the FBI did that. But nobody had malicious intent. So there were no charges. Drip, drip, drip. Just let a little bit out. Let a little bit out. Knowing Kash Patel is going to declassify and reveal a lot more. Well, hey, we'll put a report out there 4 years on. Just that alone. How could this be incomplete after 4 years? And why was there nothing in the January 6th committee on which Kinzinger, the one that you saw in the cold open, he was on that committee? How come there's nothing about these CHSs? How come they covered up so much of the truth? You can see why these names are being floated for additional pardons. That's all that the dear leader and the fake president have left to do. Pardon everybody. How rich is it for these people to scream about Donald Trump pardoning January 6th protesters, even as Biden is pardoning like 1,500? 1,500! And there's more to come. You can be sure of that. You know what the FBI did by not prosecuting the four that went into the Capitol and the, what was it, 11 that actually crossed the boundary that the police had set that day? You know what? You know what it says about the FBI and those informants that never were charged? They pardoned them because they were on the right side. So they give the FBI informants a pardon. Meanwhile, grandma goes off to prison for years because she walked in and there was an open. This didn't say anything about those massive doors, those magnetic doors that can only be opened from the inside. How did those get open? You remember Higgins, that exchange between him and Chris Wray. I think this goes back a year or two where he said, did you have any informants? Did you have any FBI assets on the inside, you know, wearing MAGA gear? This is Clip 5.
Did the FBI have confidential human sources embedded within the January 6th protesters on January 6th of 2021?
Well, Congressman, as I'm sure you can appreciate, I have to be very careful about what I can say about when.
Even now, because that's what you told us 2 years ago.
May I finish? About when we do and do not, and where we have and have not used confidential human sources. But to the extent that there's a suggestion, for example, that the FBI's confidential human sources or FBI employees in some way instigated or orchestrated January 6th, that's categorically false.
Did you have confidential human sources dressed as Trump supporters inside the Capitol on January the 6th prior to the doors being opened?
Again, I had to be very careful.
It should be a no. Can you not tell the American people no? We did not have confidential human sources dressed as Trump supporters positioned inside the Capitol.
Gentlemen's time has expired.
You should not.
Should be no. Easy answer, isn't it? If the agency's not corrupt, if the agency hasn't been thoroughly politicized top to bottom, did you have CHSs? Notice how he tried to divert over to, hey, there were no agents. And we weren't inciting it at all. You know, this report, as revealing as it is, it really doesn't say anything about what those confidential human sources did. What were the four inside the Capitol doing? They broke the law by going in. We know that because that's what the DOJ has clearly established in putting 1,500 of them, MAGA supporters, in jail or prosecuting them anyway. So it was illegal. You broke the law if you went inside. So four FBI guys go inside and nothing happens to them. And then there's Chris Wray 2 years ago. Lying, covering up. I mean, he's under oath. And he's ongoing investigation. Look at how they hide behind their so-called investigations. How could an inspector general's report coming out 4 years after the fact be incomplete? You can see why. Again, you can see in all of this God's miraculous hand. We need the fulfilled prophecy ticker at the bottom of the screen. God had to intervene. Who could have known there was this level of corruption inside of these federal agencies? No wonder Kash Patel's been saying, first thing you need to do is get in there and shut it all down, the FBI. The New York Post says, it had been previously known that the FBI had some informants on the ground during the riot, but the exact scope was unclear. Lawmakers had peppered officials with questions to the effect, but were greeted with sidestepping. That's what you saw there from Chris Wray. He's the FBI director. And he just sidesteps the question. How could it have been dangerous 2 years ago to say, well, yeah, we did have 26 CHSs in there. What were they doing? They don't want to answer any of those questions. They just want it left in the darkness. Well, they were just gathering information. If that were the case, then why didn't the riot, again, we'll play along, why didn't they stop it before it ever got started? Answer, because they wanted violence. Because they wanted it to appear to be a riot. They wanted it to look like an insurrection. Go back to Sundance has been on this perhaps better than anybody else, but go back to, again, what was supposed to happen on that day. If you look at Conservative Treehouse and get the post from yesterday where he's talking about this, he's got a link to something that he wrote earlier this year. I think it was on January 6th. So the three-year anniversary of this hoax, Sundance says, I recorded everything going on that day, because he knew how momentous this day was. He recorded like all of the cable news networks. So he has it. He's got the receipts. He knows. Others have tried to cover it up and just say, look, there was an insurrection. That's all that you need to know. What happened? What was supposed to happen on that day? He says here, I never in my wildest imagination, and I have a pretty vivid imagination, expected to see the unmistakable, perfectly timed coincidence that occurred when they were supposed to look into voter fraud. That's me. He says one member raises a motion with another in waiting for his turn. Those two motions were well known and advertised. This is what was supposed to happen in Congress that day. These were motions to vote for a pause in the certification to examine electoral vote fraud and irregularities. I can't speak to the veracity and substance of those motions. They were never allowed to even be floored. It was at the exact moment, that exact moment, that the House chambers were suspended and four of the key members, Pence, Pelosi, Schumer, and McConnell, were escorted out right after initiating the end of the session. It says, effectively, this resulted in that motion never being floored at all. Then when reconvened under special emergency rules, inexplicably, those two motions, and perhaps more, we will never know, or will we, were not even attempted to be motioned. That was not just peculiar to me. It says here, it all started to make more sense when I did some study on constitutional law and the history of specific special authorities given to President of the Congress, Pence, in this case. Not only did he have the authority and the power to suspend the certification, but the duty to address the motion in the same sense that it becomes vital to debate to the debate clause. So you see how the deep state, you see how why the DOJ and the FBI had to interfere in the election. They had been doing it previous to this, previous to January 6th, I mean, covering up Hunter's laptop and so on. They had a trial run with the fake kidnapping of Gretchen Whitmer. Remember that? All those FBI agents involved and encouraging these MAGA supporters to do something crazy that they didn't even want to do? Yeah, it's all coming together. They've been exposed. And they know what's coming. So they're going to let a little bit out, a little bit out, a little bit out. And then Ray, of course, he's off and running. He's resigned. And they'll do whatever they can to buy a little bit more time so that they can, if there's an interim guy in there for a few months, throw as much dirt at Kash Patel as possible, cover up more crimes. You know the drill. They've been getting away with it for years and years and years. And finally, so much of it is being exposed. Let me just see. I don't have much time left. Play this one from Jesse Waters last night, clip 6.
But the FBI is worse than the media. The FBI knew what was in this report. They covered it up before the election. And then the director says he's resigning the day before it comes out. Give me a break. This kind of sliminess is why Trump nominated Kash Patel. I wonder what else Kash is going to find in the bureau when he looks under the hood.
This is the one that I referenced earlier, where Jesse then goes on and talks about how that they never in their wildest dreams thought that Donald Trump would ever return to power. And here again, keep in mind, when I brought it with me. Here's the issue. Showed you this yesterday. Miracle victory. Again, I want you to appreciate God's hand in all of this. Going up against what he did for years, Donald Trump, I mean. Going back to the IG report on Crossfire Hurricane. It's amazing. This is clip 8.
It seems like now it's obvious, but if you were to go back in time, a lot of people that were involved in this kind of activity, they would have assumed that Donald Trump would never be president again. They would assume that certainly he wouldn't be in a position where he can appoint the kind of people that we're seeing coming into his administration to get the transparency, to get to the bottom of weaponization of the DOJ, weaponization of the FBI, the lawfare that they have already engaged in. If this were to continue, if this were to perpetuate itself from the left against Republicans, this could bring down the Republic. This is very serious stuff. And January 6th, as we know, was supposed to be the incident that would keep Trump and the MAGA movement out of power forever. I think they believe that that would be the case, clearly based on this last election. It isn't.
It's just like my father has said before. This was designed to bring down the Republic. They were so close, so close. The segment we have with Lee Smith, he talks about just the some of the changes that Donald Trump's next administration will bring in. And then we spend some time once again on the dear leader, Barack Hussein Obama. And as I said to Lee Smith, I mean, so many of our programs have this running theme of Obama versus Trump. And he's like, that's right. That's right. That's what we're seeing. That's what we've been seeing ever since Trump came down the escalator. I mean, the way they view it, the Antiochus people, when they look at it in the political sense, is that, you know, Donald Trump disrupted their plans. It's bigger than that. God looked at the bitter affliction. God saw that we were very near the end of this republic as it existed from the start. And so he intervened, didn't he? To save Israel, or to save America, by the hand of Jeroboam. This from Revolver. It says the DOJ, well, the substance of the report as well as the timing helped to shed light on FBI Director Wray's seemingly abrupt and premature decision to resign. It says further on, for all of the damning vindication of its admissions, the DOJ IG report is still more damning in terms of its omissions. There's not a single word about the most damning smoking gun of all of January 6th, the January 6th pipe bombs. And this is despite absolutely scandalous revelations indicating near certainty of Capitol Police, ATF, and Secret Service involvement to cover up the pipe bomb scandal. This was, as Sundance brings out, this was like their backup plan. They had to have the riot to stop the proceedings, or they had to have the pipe bomb over where Kamala Harris was. When they didn't need that, then they just shoved it aside. They don't care about it. Kinzinger doesn't care about it. No. Liz Cheney doesn't. This is the real insurrection, what we're talking about here. And like Buck Sexton said there with Jesse, it nearly brought down the republic. And so now they're scurrying, trying to cover their tracks, trying to cover up crimes. It says here further on, most notably in relation to the FBI, we recently learned that the head of the Washington field office of the FBI lied about the Bureau's inability to receive geofencing data that would have positively identified the pipe bomber. For that matter, we also learned that as early as mid-2022, the FBI had deleted all surveillance footage of the pipe bomb location on January 6th. None of these damning questions is so much as addressed at all in this report. It just raises more questions, doesn't it? It just shows that it's even worse. It's even worse than what's described in this 80-some page report. Just like, and we know this, even from Bible prophecy, Ezekiel 8, where God says to the prophet, come back, look through this hole in the wall again. And you're going to see it's even worse than you thought. That's what we're surely going to find. Once Kash Patel is in there, and more documents are declassified, and God sheds light on this real insurrection, they overtook the government in 2020. They stole the election and never imagined that Donald Trump would ever come back. He was dead politically. He was blotted out. He was censored. And then when he announces he's going to run again, they went after him with every kind of lawfare you could imagine. That was supposed to destroy him, put him in jail for hundreds and hundreds of years. And then when that started to fizzle, well, let's send in an assassin, a would-be assassin, twice, and try to take him out. None of it happened because God wouldn't let it happen, like that issue of the trumpet we had from a few months ago. Why is God protecting this man? As I said at the start, you almost do need a tracker at the bottom of the show, at the bottom of the video, the bottom of your screen, so that you can just see how many fulfilled prophecies we are actually witnessing in these last days. When we come back, you'll have this week's segment of World Watch, followed by a pre-recorded segment that we had with Lee Smith on Wednesday. That would be December 11. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com.
China will no longer export certain rare earth minerals like gallium, germanium, and antimony to the United States, the Chinese Commerce Ministry announced on December 3rd. China monopolizes the world's rare earth mineral supply, exploiting cheap labor and lax environmental regulations to mine far more than any other country. These valuable minerals are vital ingredients in many crucial electronics, including smartphones, weapons, and other military technologies. China's decision to ban exporting rare earth minerals to the U.S. comes just a day after the U.S. increased restrictions on China's ability to import semiconductors and the technology required to make them. Tensions between the U.S. and China are rising, and this tit-for-tat trade warfare will soon escalate dramatically. To learn more, read Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury's article, America is Being Besieged Economically. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol declared an emergency martial law on December 3rd for the first time in nearly 50 years. He said it was aimed at thwarting anti-state forces among the opposition Democratic Party, which he accused of aligning with communist North Korea. Within hours of the announcement, outraged members of South Korea's parliament raced to the National Assembly building and voted 190-0 to demand Yoon revoke the order. Thousands of protesters gathered outside where they clashed with police and military. A few hours later, Yoon accepted the National Assembly's vote and lifted the law. Yoon likely invoked the law to keep himself from being impeached. It is usually only invoked during a major crisis, giving full authority to military commanders. The president's move was seen as a threat to democracy. It is also a sign of larger global trends, the increasing instability in democracies across the world, and the rise in geopolitical tensions. To learn about the only true solution to these problems, read Democracy is Dying. After 25 years of negotiations, the European Commission and the South American Alliance Mercosur, comprised of Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, Uruguay, and Paraguay, finally signed a free trade agreement on December 6th. Prior to landing in Latin America for the signing of the agreement, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen posted on X, "We have the chance to create a market of 700 million people, the largest trade and investment partnership the world has ever seen." The treaty still needs to be approved by the European Parliament, the Council of Ministers, and the national parliaments. At least 15 national votes, representing 65% of the European Union population, are required for approval. The Trumpet and its predecessor, The Plain Truth, have long warned that an alliance between Europe and Latin America would be bad news for the U.S. In 1962, The Plain Truth warned, "The United States is going to be left out in the cold as two gigantic trade blocs, Europe and Latin America, mesh together and begin calling the shots in world commerce." To learn more about this key end-time prophecy, read America is Being Besieged Economically. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
How do you think the, I mean,
we've made the point on this show that you saw it in France over the weekend where they're treating Donald Trump as if he's already president, practically. But when he does come in and is inaugurated, how do you think he will, just his administration, will change the region, the Middle East?
Well, I mean, I think that the central point is just that. I mean, you're going to have people who are not, you're going to have people who are not anti-Israel. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but we actually had people in the Biden administration who were anti-Israel and who were pro-Iran. I mean, one of the things that the Trump administration, one of their priorities, we talk about how they're going to have to go after the deep state and clean out DOJ and FBI, and all these things are true. But one of the most crucial investigations they have will be at the Department of Defense and the Department of State, where there was an Iranian influence operation, if not an Iranian spy ring. So to find out exactly what happened there, if any programs and resources have been compromised, that's a big deal. But that's indicative right there of where the Biden administration was. It was public. Everyone knew that Pentagon official Arianna Tabatabai had participated in an Iranian influence operation. Republican senators made a big deal out of it. It was in the press. Mm-hmm. I wrote about it. And they didn't care.
Yeah.
What did that tell us? It told us that their sympathies were with Iran. So the idea there was someone there from an Iranian intelligence project, that was not a problem for them.
Yeah.
That will not be true of the Trump administration.
Yeah, as far as those elements that are pro-Iran, I remember some of your writing way back at the first term of Obama. You were writing about how he had these back-channel discussions going on with Iranian personnel even before he was elected. Like he came in, I mean, you see it in the Cairo speech even, but he came in wanting to empower Iran, and that was, like you said, that was his signature foreign policy victory, the way he saw it, the JCPOA. So what was it that sort of clued you in that early to know that Obama's, he's going to upend the region?
Fouad Azami. Fouad Azami was a great writer, a wonderful man, and he died about a decade ago now. Mm-hmm. And he was a wonderful writer, and a wonderful observer. He was, Lebanese born, and taught in the United States, Johns Hopkins, and elsewhere for many years. Great guy, and he wrote a very important article, I thought, in 2008 about Obama. About how the way that Obama spoke, his speeches, these were not the words. It was not the tenor of an American. And Fouad, having come from the Middle East, is that I recognize these sounds.
Right.
I recognize this language. So that was important. People who people who were watching closely and who knew what it sounded like.
Right.
The other thing was, one of the amazing things, and I know we'll talk about this more later, but Barack Obama he never hid what he was up to. People just didn't want to believe it. And
right.
So when people said, well, why does he want a deal with Iran? Why does he want to legalize Iran's nuclear weapon? Well, the most neutral way we can phrase this is that he wanted to create a balance of power in the Middle East, right? But creating a balance of power means that you're weakening your allies and you're strengthening your adversaries. Why do that, right? What is the point of that when the Middle East is a place where you must keep your allies strong, right? So everyone knows, like, well, if you mess with the Israelis, you're messing with the United States.
Right.
If you're messing with these people, you mess with the Americans, and no one wants to mess with the Americans. But Obama, based on an academic theory of balance of power, right, or a theory that worked in 19th century Europe, but it doesn't fit for the Middle East. But as we saw things develop more and more, we understood that all Obama was doing was strengthening the Iranians at the expense of American allies.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just Israel. It was also Saudi Arabia. It was also Turkey.
Right.
Right. So that's That was out in the open the whole time. It was just people didn't want to believe it or see it because it was so insane.
Right.
The Iranians have so much American blood on their hands. Why do we want to? Why would an American president want to legalize their nuclear weapons program?
Right. You've mentioned that journalist that said when he listened to Obama, he didn't hear an American.
Yeah.
What did he mean by that?
What he heard was the third world.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, we can go back to that time in 2008, and we all remember it, right? It's like, what's this? Like kids' choirs singing about Obama. I mean, this just feels like, you know. And some people made fun of it at the time about, you know, what it feels like, dear leader. It feels like North Korea or something like that. But it wasn't American, right? Mm-hmm. There was something foreign. And what Fouad Hajjami caught was he caught the third world. It wasn't even echoes. It was more than that. It was actually quoting third world principles, third world imagery.
Yeah. Yeah. My father's written a lot about the reaction to Obama from the media here in the United States, and just how that as one. Former journal, he's since died, Hastings, I think is his name. He said that when Obama spoke to the media, the media swooned.
Yes.
There's the tingle up the leg, and there's all these comments that were practically worshiping him.
Right.
What do you think, if his tone and his message was so foreign to American ideals, why do you think the left embraced it so? They were so over the top with it.
I think the way you phrase it in an interesting way. I mean, that's what the left wants, and I think that probably we have to recognize. For a long time, we sort of dismissed the idea that leftist education had any effect on American politics. But we saw with the rise of Obama, it absolutely did.
Yeah.
In a sense that it prepared people for the rise of Barack Obama. And for what Barack Obama has been doing since he left office.
Yeah.
So I think that's a large part of it. I mean, look, not everyone on the New York Times editorial board is a Marxist, you know, or is a Maoist. But but certainly we look now. We know at the junior levels there is a lot of that.
Right.
The senior levels there were all sorts of different desires and urges having to do with race and redemption. So there was just a lot going on. It was very. I'd like to think that right now a lot of this is being sorted out and rethought.
Did you think that Obama, from the start, was bad for America?
I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. For those reasons, this is not, you know, it wasn't an American sound. It wasn't an American campaign. It's not. They're not American ideas.
Yeah.
Right. And we've seen these play out. Right. We've seen precisely what it looks like when Barack Obama's administration spied on the Donald Trump campaign. Right, so that's not an American thing.
Right.
That's corrupt in a particular way.
Yeah.
It's not an American thing to legalize the nuclear weapons program of a terror state like Iran.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, a lot of their sympathy toward third world cause. I mean, Cuba, okay, what? You know, Iran. These were all big issues. The Islamic Revolution was a big leftist issue in 1978 and 79, and apparently it still is. And by the way, Syria is as well. We see this still, that people believe that Syria, you know, the beating heart of Arab resistance, as it's often been referred to. Well, that's the reason why a lot on the American left love Assad. They thought that he was there sticking it to the West, fighting Israel, fighting the Americans. That should tell us something about the American left. Why do you revere this man whose claim to power is how he, you know, how he kills Westerners?
Mm-hmm. We have like 16 years now to look at, and the way that Obama came in the first time, and as I say, even the media, they were swooning. But there's been some articles here recently about just even the reaction to Trump coming back and how the radical left, or at least the more violent elements of it, it's as if it's been defanged, like they haven't taken to the streets like they did during the BLM riots in 2020. I mean, do you feel like, you've written recently, I believe, that Obama's not going away. I mean, he still has his house down the road from the White House. But how do you feel like the radical left has been, if it has been, defanged in any way?
Well, maybe you saw, I guess it was last week, there was a post, a video clip of Obama talking about, you know, people were remarking about how one of Obama, here's another third world thing, inversion, right, inversion of reality. He's talking about, oh, you know, Trump using the DOJ to prosecute his political adversaries, and they fix elections. I'm like, I mean, it was astonishing to most people. But how does that end? Or that clip ended with Obama talking about, well, we're going to draw a line right here, and we're going to fight, or, you know, phrasing to that effect. And as people also remarked, he looked weak. He looked like he was struggling. And he does look weak. He does look like he's struggling. He does know that he's hemorrhaging power. And by the way, the fall of the Assad regime hurts the Obama faction in the United States, right? Their ability to project power abroad is vastly weakened right now. With Iran getting weaker, the Obama team here gets weaker. But I don't think they're going away.
Yeah.
That's there are two different Donald Trump programs, two of the most important things that Donald Trump talked about on the campaign. Right, the deportation operation, as well as making our elections transparent again. Right, so election integrity and deportation. Well, these are pillars right now of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. Right, they need illegal aliens to win elections. Right, they need a new client base. And we're not talking about voters. That's what we're talking about, a client base.
Yeah.
So again, here's another thing about the third world. They're opening the borders for people from the third world who are accustomed to the client-patron relationship, right? So insofar as Trump is going to fight those two things, especially the deportation, the left has to fight that.
Yeah.
Because it's existential for them. And I've written about it because I've gone through a lot of their war game scenarios, and they're quite open about it, what they're going to do, how they plan to fight, and a lot of it involves political violence. A lot of it involves, you know, riots throughout American cities.
Yeah, in your book, you open the book, Disappearing the President, you open it by saying how that, I think you even quote Donald Trump, who says, I had no voice.
No.
He had been silenced, and that was just 4 years ago.
Right.
And you probably don't believe it's, well, you just said you don't believe Obama's necessarily been silenced, but what do you make of that unbelievable, you know, the tables have been flipped, and now Trump's got a stronger voice than he's ever had, and then, like you say, Obama shows up last week, and people think, you know, he just doesn't look good, he doesn't sound good, et cetera.
As I was saying before, I mean, any American who's lived through Donald Trump's campaign, if they don't know it now, they'll soon come to realize that we lived through historical events, right? Just amazing. But it wasn't just the last, it wasn't just Donald Trump getting through the lawfare campaign. It wasn't just Donald Trump getting through it wasn't just Donald Trump standing up after he'd been shot in the face at Butler, Pennsylvania, saying, fight, fight, fight. It's been the entire 4 years. But even before, if you look at how much he had to fight during his first term,
right?
I mean, most people, I think that, you know, most of your audience will know this, but I know dealing with people in Washington and elsewhere, you heard of me, and not to insult any other Republican candidates, you ran, like, I think Ron DeSantis is a great governor, seems to be a great guy. But people who are talking about DeSantis or other candidates, well, they're not going to bring the amount of heat that Trump brings. I'm like, no, you don't get it.
Right.
It's like Trump is the one who fights back. That's right. That's why they want to destroy him. So what he's been through the last 4 years, starting with January 6, 2021, right, when they started banishing him from Facebook, Twitter, the second impeachment, and they raided Mar-a-Lago, the incredible, insane lawfare campaign waged against him. And so he just, instead of folding, he just kept gathering strength, and which is an amazing thing. And right. That for Americans too, it's like that's who we're supposed to be as a people,
right?
Right? You can't keep me down,
right.
You know, businessmen, athletes, whatever. When we talk about success in America, it's hard,
yeah.
Right? It's hard, but it's there. But you have to keep doing it. But and so look at what Trump did. I mean, it's astonishing.
Yeah, we talk often about his courage and his fighting spirit. Added to that, you mentioned Butler, Pennsylvania. He and quite a few of his supporters have said that they feel like it was divine providence that, you know, he's head tilted. He had the slideshow over on the right instead of on the left, like usual. Right. Do you feel like that there was divine providence behind his life being spared that day?
I think God loves America. I mean, Israel and the United States are the two countries that are covenantal nations, right? So, I mean, I know that we're blessed, mm-hmm. and the fact that that happened was just I feel that we're blessed.
Yeah.
So I know that you've spoken with General Michael Flynn before, and I know he's been a guest before, and I remember General Flynn telling me this was amazing. We were talking about Trump getting shot. You know, General Flynn is a combat veteran for many, many years, and he's seen lots of people shot. He's seen people killed. And he said, you know, most people when they get shot, said, you know, a guy gets shot in the helmet or something, and he's alive, but, you know, he's stunned and stuff. Said, most people, you get shot, and you're in shock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you're down. You need someone to pick you up, or you're just in shock.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but not Trump. he said, Trump, there just this surge of energy and adrenaline went through him. And Flynn is like, he's like, that is just rare. And, you know, so here's General Flynn again saying, which I'd never seen it that way before. But, you know, but for him to provide that perspective to illustrate how rare you know, how rare Donald Trump's courage is, but maybe for him, it wasn't even courage, right? Or he didn't think of it like that. It's just like, that, I got to get back up.
Yeah.
You know, one of my friends remarked, he said, yeah, well, the other really amazing thing is when Trump gets up, you know, he's looking for his shoe.
Right.
You know, they wanted to carry him off stage. He's like, no, and like, where's my shoe? So he has the presence of mind also to say, you're not taking me off stage, right. Looking like some guy in a, you know,
right.
Looking like some person in a nursery home or a maternity ward.
Yeah.
Where are my shoes? I'm going to leave this place right. Dignified, looking like the President of the United States. So, yeah, so it's just, again, but that's part of the historical moment that we lived through and we're still living through.
Yeah. Do you feel like he obviously sees this term differently, much differently than he did going into 2017. How much courage, how much do you think that courage and that fighting spirit is actually going to accomplish with respect to, you know, draining the swamp, as he often says, or making some dramatic changes in the DOJ, the FBI, that sort of thing?
There's a lot to do.
Yeah.
I'm very happy that he's already you know, on Truth Social, he's used Truth Social to already accomplish certain things. He told the Chinese. He said, you know, I've asked you before to stop the flow of fentanyl, but you haven't. So I'm going to tariff you an additional 10% with whatever other tariffs we're going to put on you. He got the attention of the president of Mexico and the prime minister of Canada by saying, yeah, you're being tariffed 25%. And, you know, and they're concerned, so they better cooperate. So again, I'm optimistic that he's already, you know, he's seeing different problems. And also a lot of his nominations, especially, I should say, Kash Patel, you know, show that show that Donald Trump understands what needs to be done, what are the priorities. But again, there's a tremendous amount. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just look at the DOJ, what are the things they have to do? They have to, the new attorney general has to find a way to hold people responsible for what they did to Trump during the first term. And we're talking about crimes, right? We're talking about bad, we're talking about illegal surveillance. We're talking about a lot of bad things. All the way up through January 6th, what did these prosecutors do? Mm-hmm. You know, did they take unlawful actions to target Trump supporters? So that's one thing. The second thing is they have to help Donald Trump win his second agenda. Look at all the cases that are going to be brought against Trump for the deportation campaign. So, well, you have Tom Homan on one hand running that operation. You have to have DOJ supporting Tom Homan and the president every step of the way. You have to have the DOJ running point on election integrity.
Right.
And at the same time, you have to clean out the Department of Justice. I don't know how many hundreds of people there are real problems, but there are enough real problems. So it's a massive workload, and people have to get behind the president's agenda, because these 4 years are going to go by very quickly. And if these things aren't done, we're going to be in a bad place 4 years from now.